morning, everybody. This is WTBR's Morning Drive. My name is Bill Sturgeon, and once again, for his monthly visit, and I have to tell you how honored I am that he does this. I have Congressman Richard Neal. We go back, he had dark hair, curly, nice looking, and I had hair. But now his is senior looking, and mine is gone. But he is our congressperson. And for people that haven't been keeping up, throughout this whole dilemma of COVID and all of these things, Congressman Neal has really taken care of his constituents. That's my opinion. And everybody knows the views and opinions expressed on this program are mine.
Right.
And those of my guests. They in no way represent the Pittsfield School Department, School Committee, Peter Marchetti in the mayor's office, Peter White in the city council president, and or the person who was riding their bicycle this morning when it was 31 degrees. I admire you. I wouldn't have been outside. Congressman Neal, how are you?
I'm doing well, Bill. And I'm glad you mentioned some of those issues because it's important to remember that during the pandemic, the worst moments of it, we were able to make sure that aid got through to all the people of Berkshire County. And everybody was paid during that period of time. The hospitals were taken care of. Everybody made sure their checks were cashed, their ability to do a bit work from home. So that was, for me, one of the most meaningful parts of my career, coupled with the fact that it was the Ways and Means Committee, and I was chairman at the time, when that money actually began to flow. And if you also consider what I think is one of the great accomplishments that I've participated in during a career, it's reestablishing North Adams Hospital.
Oh, there's no question about it. And you know, the other wonderful part about it's brought back that community.
It brought back the community.
It really has. And I know people up there and they're, it was kind of, in my opinion, it was kind of goofy to close it anyhow, but no one called and asked me and I was hurt about that. You know.
Well, it's a big deal because it's like the local library. It's like the town hall meeting. People identify with the local hospital because oftentimes the experience that they have there is not pleasant, largely because it could be the emergency room.
Right.
And so nonetheless, I can tell you that the people that were devoted to that hospital based upon the reopening 10 years to the day from the time it was closed, pretty astounding.
Yeah.
And, you know, most of the stories across America today are about closing hospitals with a reopen one.
Yeah.
And that's a substantial achievement.
And like I said, just from folks we know, we were at the Bonnie Fair about a month or so ago up there in Adams, and it's brought back life to that community. And that's so.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. And we were there, you know, just a couple of weeks ago for Greylock Glen, which was also pretty remarkable. We were talking about it.
And a beautiful.
Earlier. It's about $3.5 million of federal money that helped bring about really what is a spectacular setting. And if you sat inside and you looked out across the mountain on a beautiful fall October day with the sun shining brightly, wow, we're reminded of just how beautiful the Berkshires really are.
And, you know, I think sometimes we don't give ourselves enough credit.
Yep.
We live in a beautiful area of the world. I've been all over the world. This is always great to come home to, like now, the trees are changing. And I'm going to ask you to check with your friends at the EPA and see if we can burn the leaves, because I can remember when I was a kid, that was fall.
Yeah.
Everybody'd rake their leaves into the gutter, right? And then they'd burn them.
Smell of it stayed with us for months.
Oh, I know. But I just really do, you know, the Polish princess and I, we could have retired anywhere. And I mean anywhere. People wanted me to retire in the Philippines. They wanted me to retire in the Netherlands. But this is home.
Yep.
And this is a beautiful city. Yeah, we get cold weather. We get snowstorms. But we don't get tornadoes. We don't get hurricanes. A lot of things. So, yeah.
No matter how far we travel, there's still nothing like your own bed.
That's right. And boy, You got that right. And there's just an aside. I get so angry, not angry. I get upset with all this malarkey, and you'll know what that is. You can translate that for the people who don't know. The malarkey about this country. I've been all over the world. People would do anything to get to this country.
And they do.
And they do. And then when they get here, some of them work their tails off.
That's the reality. And it has really sustained the masses from those across the globe who were dispossessed. The welcoming, as we know, has not always been as pleasant as we advertise.
Right.
Not to miss the point that within one or two generations, they generally make their way into the mainstream of American society and the economy.
That's right.
And I'm amazed on a pleasant vein everywhere I go when I bump into people who will say my mother and father were from here or my grandparents were from there. And then you say to them, well, what are you doing now? And they've got a good path to upward mobility.
Yeah.
And I think that we should never miss the idea that this really is the exceptional nation.
Yeah. And to be, and I think sometimes it's like when people live in an upper middle class and they complain about, you know, well, I didn't get my Dior ties this Christmas. Well, dude, I get this, Salvation Army, but lots going on in the country, lots going on. You got an election coming up, in case you hadn't heard about that, some open position, a president, I guess. I will say this, and from my heart, I always liked Joe Biden.
Yeah, he did a great job.
I always liked him. When I was there, he was one of the power brokers, I guess. And I mean that complimentary, not derogatory. Well, he was a nice man.
He had the right personal dimension in the sense that he understood the flow of legislation, the rhythms of legislative life. And I think the country is going to benefit for years to come from the CHIPS Act. They're going to benefit from the Infrastructure Bill, the PAC Act. They're going to benefit from clearly the Butch Lewis Act.
Yeah.
And Joe Biden gets a pat on the back. And by the way, we were able to do it with a very small majority. But these are seismic pieces of legislation.
Oh.
And I think you'd be hard-pressed. You'd have to almost go back to the Great Society to have the sort of achievements that we've had legislatively. But the problem oftentimes with legislation is that people don't feel it for years to come. And I think in Biden's case, even this morning, as I was getting dressed very early, the unemployment rate about 4.1%.
Yeah.
He's had almost 17 million jobs created during his 3.5 years as president. And for the critics who say inflation, well, inflation was an international problem, not just an American problem. I understand that, but it's also headed in the right direction, inflationary trends.
Yeah.
And I just think that generationally, I would be very fond of Joe Biden, because I think that today, if you're not scolding, if you're not hollering, if you're not screeching about things, then you don't draw a lot of attention. But it's still the day-to-day governance responsibility that you have to improve the lives of people. And I like finishing many of my sentences by saying, you know, you meet people that can put on a good seminar, but it's legislation that changes our lives.
That's right. I happened to be with a group last night. We meet every other Monday. They're wonderful people. And, you know, we're all older. Let's put it that way. We all get free memberships at a senior center, you know, kind of thing. And what we were saying is, what's happened? You know, here's a war story, and we'll move on. I'm in the Big Y supermarket. This woman who's probably as old as I am. I'm with my cane and I'm pushing my little cart. She ran in the back of me. And I said, whoa, what? And I turned around. And I said, what's that? She said, would you hurry up? I only have so much time to shop.
Sounds to me like you've got a good workman's comp case.
Yeah. Jeez, I'm telling you. Yeah. But I agree. Why are we so mad at each other?
Part of it is the media covers more and more conflict.
Yes.
And the challenge with that is it also amplifies conflict simultaneously. And as mainstream media have shrunk, there's less context,
Yes.
less
Yes.
reporting on why people do what they do, say what they do. So we go right to the conflict in the story as opposed to the context of the story. And I was talking to a couple of young people this morning at a local bank as well, and they would be more prone to social media than I would be for sure.
Yeah.
And I said to them, how many times do we read something on Monday and then on Friday say, how could I have believed that?
Right.
And I said, the problem is it's the way news is consumed because it's blasted at us. And it's conflict 24 hours a day. And I use the metaphor of suggesting, I wish people would just lift their thumbs and do a little bit more listening. You'd, I think, come up with more remedies.
This may saintly Irish mother would say, the good Lord gave you 2 ears and one mouth. Think about it.
That's proportion.
But no, I really think that COVID started it. I really do believe COVID had a lot to do with the loss of socialization and all kinds of things. But right now, the economy appears to be recovering. We are certainly. I really hope and pray that we settle this Middle Eastern thing.
Yeah. Well, I will tell you that I know that Secretary Blinken is there again today. I think that we none of us want to see innocent people killed in Gaza, but I also think that the corresponding responsibility that we all have is to understand that there needs to be an acknowledgement about Israel's right to exist and to defend itself.
Absolutely.
And nobody wants to see harm done to innocent people. I would like and I favor the establishment of a Palestinian nation. I think that drafting that as part of the overall agreement can take place. I think sadly, we're probably more away from that than we were 2 years ago.
Absolutely.
And we're back, by the way, to the same sort of stalemate that too often we have witnessed. But you know, to your point about the economy, and I'll come right back to it when you're
Yeah,
ready.
no, that's
My
fine.
copy of this week's The Economist,
Oh, yeah.
it says, "The envy of the world, America's economy, the envy of the world."
Yeah.
And when you consider all of what we were talking about earlier, there are about 8 million vacant employment opportunities across the nation right now. 8 million, with an economy where 66% of the people are who are able to work are working.
Right.
When you, as I measured earlier, the unemployment rate at 4.1%, 16 million jobs. And we are the indispensable nation.
Yeah.
And it worries me, as you've described, that at a time when I know the world is in turmoil,
Right.
but we also should also take some satisfaction from the fact that our democracy functions. 2 weeks from this day, there's going to be a presidential election. And guess what? 4 years from now, on the first Tuesday after the first Monday in November, there's going to be another presidential election.
Right.
We know that. And we're going to subscribe to it. So I think we're all uneasy about the tone of this presidential campaign.
Yes.
I wish that were better words chosen and applied.
Yep.
And I wish that traditional media, legacy media, could have more impact on letting people understand the difference between misinformation, disinformation, and hard-earned facts.
Yeah,
Sure.
and but it's almost, I'll tell you what happened this morning. Then we'll go back to the Middle East just for, this morning the phone rang. It was a number local. We answer it, and it's 5 or 6 times a day. And what with this AI thing, I was colleagues of mine have said, don't answer, or if you answer and say hello, and they don't immediately come on, hang up. Because now they're recording your voice.
It's implausible that a recorded voice using artificial intelligence
Yeah.
would be making this call on something as important as electing a president of the United States or a United States
Yeah.
senator.
Yeah.
And the voiceover is indeed as advertised artificial.
Right. Yeah.
How can you dialogue with an artificial voice at election time?
Before I forget, because, you know, at my age, that's why I bring the Polish princess, because I forget where I parked the car. But you know what I found with that? Press the alarm. You can find your car. If you press the alarm button on your thong there, you just press it. If your horn starts blowing, you know where your car is. So, you know, I've used it several times.
I think the people across the street from me use it too, to be honest with you. And they forget that they used it.
Yeah. Well, there's been that occasion too. The neighbors have been kind. But all kidding aside, there's a book. It's called Anxious Generation. It was on the New York Times for. I'm into it. I have to tell you, it's 100%, in my opinion, accurate and to the point. You
I
know?
Watched the PBS review of it with the author. I think his name is Haidt, H-A-I-D-T.
Yes, yes.
And I listened to the review. I haven't read the book. I intend to, but it's still on the Times bestseller list.
Yeah.
And as he was explaining things, he pointed out that the problem with social media is that everything's a crisis. And the truth is that that's why we have a representative democracy, to deal intermittently with a crisis that is not necessarily a real crisis.
Yeah.
But good sense, well-meaning people devoted to getting an answer, you can solve a lot of these problems. I think part of the challenges we have today, Bill, in our political system is that the reward politically is not to do something. And
yeah.
That too often people get elected by saying that they're so hostile to the system that they can never be part of the solution.
Yeah. And they want clicks.
Oh.
It's all about, I'm going to put the most outrageous thing I can because I'll get more clicks.
Well, I think that that's part of it. And what I think the consumer of news needs to understand on that basis is that you still need a business model to create a successful publication. And that's where the clicks come in.
Yeah.
If you can ridicule, scorn, and heap enough bad will on somebody, sometimes that improves clicks.
Yeah.
And the clickbait that we all too often experience, boy, is it hypercharged in the political arena.
Yeah.
People begin by wanting to believe the worst, and then they go out looking for evidence, even if it's untrue, that confirms the worst.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's harder for people like myself, who really are solution-based. I mean, I take great satisfaction from the achievements. I described some of them earlier.
Yeah.
And how about Wakona Park? I mean, the money is there that we established from the federal government. How about our success in rescuing the Postal Service? And look, there are problems with it for sure, but we're in a hell of a lot better space today than we were a year ago with the Postal Service.
They're desperate for help.
They want help.
They're desperate. Not to interrupt you. I'm coming out from one day because I had to mail some stuff, and they have a recruitment thing there.
Yeah.
A lady, you know, recruiting. And I said, what about me? I said, I'm just kidding. I'm too old. She said, no, we waived the age requirement. So of course, I brought home an application, and the Polish princess says, you can't walk from here to there. Never mind. You're never going to be a postman. But it's so true. Your accomplishments and I've had the good fortune to work on Capitol Hill, and the accomplishments are not. Remember Tip? I think it was Tip O'Neill said there's two kinds: show horse and a workhorse.
Yeah.
There. When I was there, I would say, and you were there then, what 90% were workhorses.
Yep.
You know,
I think now there's more show horses. I think that they're very good at social media. They're good at the talk shows. They're good at the cable TV shows. But you know what? One of the challenges we have, I always want to say, when was the last time they ever passed an amendment?
Yeah. Crafted a bill.
And, you know, I recall, by the way, because one of the issues that's prevalent now is this question about housing costs. And it's a legitimate issue.
Yeah, very legitimate.
Part of the problem we have is local zoning, permitting, and all of that. It's really a partnership with the federal government for resolution. But I remember my first term in 1989, I was there, and I was successful in amending a call report to establish fact based redlining that we could use to get more housing built.
Sure.
And today, the new members that would come to the Congress, that would sound quaint.
Yeah.
I mean, if they're not on social media by 3 o'clock that afternoon because they've been on it at breakfast, and if they're not scolding or ridiculing or scorning somebody,
yeah,
then much of their work is not recorded. And I worry about this because the reward of being a successful legislator used to be for what you got accomplished.
Exactly.
And we've been lucky in this district. I thought Silvio Conti did a good job. I thought John Oliver did a good job. And I inherited much of that district in Western Massachusetts, across the Berkshires, parts of Franklin County. And I've had Worcester County all of these years, as well as all of Hampden County.
Yeah.
And my point is that if you were a legislator, you came home, you know, maybe 6 weeks out from the election, and you said to the American people and to your constituents, this is what I've gotten done.
Right.
And today, I think too many people go back home and say, well, I didn't get it done because those SOBs on the other side.
I know.
You know what I mean? Where
I mean, you hear that five yeah. times a day.
Yeah.
No, you're right. And you know, you and Smitty, who's leaving, another good friend. Here's your philosophy, and I think it's so true. If we do our job every day, we don't have to worry about election day.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I would say this to you, that members of Congress, you generally get reelected in an off year election.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, it's what you do in the off year, you know, and that's how you establish your credibility. And, you know, one of the, you look at Lee with some of the projects we've had there.
Oh, absolutely.
You go right down the list with what we've done with providing money for the relocation yeah. of their public safety complex.
Yeah.
It's those sorts of issues that strike me as being most important.
And again, for viewers and listeners coming in, if you don't know, this is Congressman Richard Neal. I'm sure you know him, but there are a lot of new people that have moved into the Berkshires since COVID. And Congressman Neal has been there since the late 80s. He was chairperson of the Ways and Means Committee and has delivered so much to this bigger community of his now that he inherited. And I will just say that I've known him a long time. I knew him before he was in Washington. And I have to ask, is Tommy Fitz, is he still with us?
The former police chief?
Yeah.
Yes, he is. Yeah, he lives over at East Forest Park. Great friend of mine. In fact, I appointed him police chief.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. He's a superb cop.
He was a superb individual, human being.
He was really, you know, he was perfect. Paul Fenton had been the chief when I became mayor, and then Tom Fitzgerald succeeded him. Tom was very popular with the men and women on the job, and at the same time, he was well-regarded. He had a couple of master's degrees long before that was a noted job requirement.
Yeah.
I thought that he put a very good face on the police department, to be frank.
Well, he was the commandant of the academy when I was in it.
That's a good title for him, commandant.
Yeah, yeah. And he taught, in my opinion, and after being in it 50 plus years, he really taught people how to be a cop.
Good cop, yeah.
You know, and because he had worked all, he was a detective, he'd been on the street. I mean, he was a well-rounded guy.
He was also tough on cops.
Oh, very hard.
He was one of those individuals. He wore that uniform with great pride, as Paul Fenton had worn it. And at the same time, as chief, he was a disciplinarian. And if you were, the joke used to be that if you got to the job and the phone call said, Chief Fitzgerald wants to see you, you were in for a bad day.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. Well,
he would iron it out right there.
Yeah, we had John J. Colleen
and
Stanley Stankiewicz. And it's the same thing. Chief wants to see it. Oh, no. But before we go to break, When we come back, what do you think are going to be the top challenges facing the country over the next, you know, it's all great to say, let's hire this one or that one, but we got to have people that can handle, and I have my own opinion on some of them, but yours, I would love to hear what you have to say, because I think we have some real challenges coming in front of us.
Well, our faith in democracy is one of them.
Yeah.
I think that one of the most important parts of our democracy, as difficult as it has been throughout American history, the winner accepts the victory and the loser accepts the result.
Yeah.
And, you know, there were times when Richard Nixon could have challenged that election in 1960 and he didn't. Al Gore had a legitimate complaint in the year 2000. And throughout our history, we've had these moments, but one of the most important parts about it is the idea that you've cast a vote that's meaningful on election day. And what I think is amazing about the election cycle that we're in is whether it was 2016, 2020, or 2024, we're back to the same seven states.
Yeah.
And by the way, even in those seven states, the margins are so tiny.
Yeah.
So I think that it's not rocket science. The two candidates are spending their money and their time in those seven states.
That's right.
And I'm optimistic about our democracy. I think we've been through difficult moments before. But at the same time, the credibility of the election is really essential.
You hit the nail on the head. We'll talk about that. We got to take a break. In case you're just tuning in or not or whatever, you don't know who the good-looking guy is, his name is Richard Neal. He is a congressman from this district, and the old fat ball guy is me. But we're going to be back in just a minute. I do this, and I know I got your texts, and I get your emails. Congressman, is this flag look right? I mean, is it in the right? Is it reversed?
We're proud of it.
We are. I have friends buried under this.
You bet your life.
And I have a lot of acquaintances buried under this. And when you drive to a cemetery, any cemetery, you see these flags above the grave. That meant sometime in that person's life, they signed on the dotted line to die for this flag. Now, I don't. Here's my thing. You can not like it or whatever. All I'm asking you to do is please, please don't disrespect it for them.
You come down. Let's put it this way. When you go to a funeral mass for a veteran, there is nothing that moves that family more beyond the words of condolence.
Yeah.
Placing that flag on the casket.
That's right.
When it's taken down the middle aisle of a respective church or a synagogue.
Yeah.
And what it means to those folks, that service that they rendered at a time in their life, they thought it was worthwhile. We think it's worthwhile. And I think acknowledging that contribution and sacrifice that they made is highlighted by what you just described. I've had those cases over the years, you know, with people that have had some questions raised by their service. And we go back and try to probe their records to see if we can make sure that they do get that flag that's placed on the casket.
Yeah.
Because it's an obituary, Bill, is not about a death.
Right.
Obituary is about a life.
That's right.
And they want that service noted. And when that flag is placed on that casket as they come down the center aisle, it's a big deal.
Yes, it is. And I believe it or not, there's a group out there that they don't care for it. But that's their issue. We'll be right back. This is WTBR 89.7 FM on your radio dial. We're simulcasting on PCTV. Channel 1301. Please stay tuned. More to come with Congressman Richard Neal.
Stay tuned for more Morning Drive here on WTBR FM.
What's going on here?
Combining the miracle of modern technology with the secrets of ordinary street junkies. Producing this.
89.7 WTBR FM, Pittsfield.
Support for WTBR comes from Greylock Federal Credit Union. Proud to support high school arts and sports programs. Greylock Federal. Opportunity grows here. with locations throughout the Berkshires and online at greylock.org.
And from Evco Hypnosis. Want to lose weight, quit smoking, sleep better, or relieve stress and anxiety? Evco Hypnosis is here to help you become happier, healthier, and stronger. Call 413-212-0283 or go to evcohypnosis.com. That's EVCOhypnosis.com.
Hey, it's Sean from WTBR-FM. Whether you just found this station for the first time or you've been listening for years, you might not know everything about WTBR-FM. Want to find out more? It's easy. Just go to WTBRFM.com. You can find full programming schedules, listen to the station anywhere in the world, subscribe to our podcasts, and even learn to create a program of your own. And of course, donate to the station. That's WTBRFM.com. Check it out today.
El condado de los Berkshires se dirige hacia un mañana más brillante y ese futuro comienza contigo. Los Berkshires están al borde de caer en una gran crisis de salud mental debido a la falta de acceso, dejando algunos pacientes, especialmente niños, esperando meses para recibir la atención adecuada. Tú puedes ayudar abogando por ti mismo y por otros para encontrar carreras en la salud mental. Sé un héroe de la salud mental para los Berkshires. Para obtener más información, visita briancenter.org o namibc.org.
Hey friends, if you're looking for some party music, tune in to Polka Express with me, Bill Gustavus, every Wednesday night from 6 to 8, and Sunday mornings from 8 to 10, right here on 89.7 WTBR, Pittsfield, Massachusetts.
Support for WTBR comes from Berkshire Community College. BCC provides access to higher education to everyone in Berkshire County and beyond, offering more than 50 high-quality programs, small class sizes, and an affordable education to help their students of all ages achieve their dreams. At BCC, their middle name is Community. And from Tim's Lawn Care, it's almost time for spring cleanups. Tim's Lawn Care can also take care of your landscaping, lawn care, mulching, and more. Tim's Lawn Care, 413-281-4222 and online at timslawncarelandscaping.com.
Radio for people who used to love radio. Welcome back, WTBR.
And now back to the morning drive on WTBR-FM, Pittsfield Community Radio.
All right, we are back. I'm here with Congressman Richard Neal, and we are talking about all things that would come to mind, the world in general. My question, my before the break, was this to Congressman Neal, to think about what are our biggest issues? What are we facing? What is a country, not just as one group or the other group? I'm tired of groups. Is that we are Americans, and I'm damn proud to be an American, and I think every one of us should be. But that said, what do you think, Congressman?
Well, I do think that our faith in democracy is going to be tested. I think that's paramount. I also think that if you go to the domestic issues, clearly the issue of immigration is a very important consideration.
Yeah.
Immigration, but it has to be lawful and legal. And we need a path to citizenship for those who are willing to abide by the rules. I use the example that the barber that I have is from Italy. I've been with him for more than 50 years. The shoe man, I've been with him for years. He's from Portugal. The former tailor that I had was from Russia. And they all were in favor of immigration, but they wanted some rules.
Right.
We had gone through a process. And I think that's reasonable. I also think that there's an understanding we need them. Fertility rates are at an all-time low. We need those individuals. They have transformed the meatpacking houses of the Midwest. I don't know how our economy would function without them. They support our social security system.
Yeah.
But I do think there's a legitimate criticism about not having some rules and process and procedures. So that's a big consideration. I think continuing to grow the economy is a big deal. And the tax cuts that took place with the TCJA, as it's known, the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, I think that's right in front of us. We're going to debate that next year, whether or not it's renewed. Right. The tax cuts expire at the end of 2025. So we're going to have a chance to take a hard look at all of that. We've got that looming debt that we have to pay attention to. But, you know, it's remarkable that Our economy could even be stronger if we had better child care, if we had more opportunities, you know, for the child tax credit to be expanded. Poverty in America is still a very stubborn problem.
Yeah.
And related to everything else, it's related to our health care, which, by the way, is a much better story than it was but 10 years ago. When you stop and think of it, now there are 8 million people that are uninsured. There were 22 million before the Affordable Care Act. So I don't think we take time to at least say, geez, we did a good job with this. We did a good job with that. And my sense is that elections have a way of clarifying issues. And I'm still optimistic about the American dream. I've lived it. And I'm hoping that the American family will come together after the election, unlike the last two elections, and get on with the business before the nation.
On a global scale, what's your feeling there?
Well, look, you and I probably have the same opinion, and that is we've got to continue to boost Ukraine.
Yeah.
The people who don't realize it, I mean, if they think that Putin is going to be satisfied with Ukraine and Crimea, they're making a mistake. He's back to Estonia, Latvia, Lithuania, Poland, Bulgaria, Romania. You go right down the list. I mean, his interference in Moldova over the last couple of months in an attempt to stop them from joining European Union.
Right.
And this idea that we would abandon a principle, by the way, that was heralded by every American president back to Roosevelt, and that was standing up to the aggression of the Soviet Union and now Russia.
Yeah. And
Ronald Reagan made his career on standing up to the Soviet Union. George Bush Sr., and now for the Republican Party, and this is not a partisan criticism.
Right.
They were stalwarts in this because American foreign policy was bipartisan.
Exactly.
And I think resolving the situation in the Middle East is going to be critical. It's at the top of the radar screen. I think that that solution is going to involve a Palestinian nation. And it's going to have to involve recognition by many of our Arab allies that Israel has a right to exist.
Yeah.
And Hamas is a criminal organization for what they did.
That wasn't a military on October 7th. That was not a military operation.
That was
butchery and terrorism. Right. And somebody said, "Oh, butchery, that's a harsh word." Really? True. Really? It's a true word. Read and I would just say this. This group that I was with yesterday, that we're all of the same general age. And we all agreed. Well, these people are saying this is new. This is new. The Jews moved in and took their land. What happened to history? Does anybody read anymore? I mean, I'm sorry. I don't mean to go off on a tangent on you. But this has been a battle for
2,000 years.
Yeah, absolutely.
And Tom Friedman, the columnist for the New York Times, he summed it up in his pretty remarkable book years ago, From Beirut to Jerusalem.
I read that, yes.
The problem in the Middle East is there's some truth to what everybody says.
Right, exactly.
And I think those conflicting interpretations of the truth have brought about the stalemate that we find. But, you know, when you kiss your children goodbye or your grandchildren goodbye to go to a concert, you don't expect them to be butchered at the concert.
That's right. Exactly.
We can argue about the proportional response of Israel in Gaza, and we all agree in principle and belief we don't want to see innocent people murdered and killed.
That's exactly right.
But
nobody wants.
We need a recognition that Israel has a right to defend itself and a right to exist. And I think with a Palestinian state, a lot could flow from there. Now, just one reminder. I was talking to Hillary Clinton about 10 days or so ago. She called me to take my forecast on the election. And we talked for about a half hour or 40 minutes because I've known her for a long time. And I said, you know, I watched you, Madam Secretary, on Firing Line with Margaret Hoover. And by the way, it tells you about our social lives at a certain stage of life, Bill. If you're home watching PBS on Friday night at 9 o'clock.
Yeah, you're up at 9. Oh, I had already had an hour knocked down by that time. I record it and read it, watch it the next day.
People forget that at Camp David, Ehud Barak gave Yasser Arafat 75% of what he wanted.
Yeah.
And Arafat walked away from the deal. And she highlighted that night. I said, you know, I have that memory.
Yeah.
And what happened? She said, well, she said, that's what I try to tell people. She said, a lot of her students and others that she's had, she said, they don't remember that. They don't remember it. And they would have been on our way to a Palestinian nation.
Congratulations for giving some money to Western New England. That's really great. That's a great college.
One of my former proteges is front and center there as an assistant to the president.
Margaret. Yeah. Yeah, I bet you she keeps him in line. To get me in line, and that nobody could do that. So, and that's a compliment to you, Margaret. But we really sometimes miss out with some of our education. We got to get back. I don't want to get on a tangent here, but I really believe that we have to get back to. Teaching history, teaching civics, so that people understand. This guy, I did a radio program with a guy by the name of Lou Markham. Lou was on the city council. You might have known him. He was a coach at BCC. He was a great guy. He was a few years older than I am, but as kids growing up, we grew up in the same hood. Everybody looked to Lou. And Lou Markham, when he would have an issue on the city council, he would go to the director of the department. He wouldn't hit the newspaper, wouldn't be on the radio. He got stuff done like you get stuff done. You're not on the television saying what you're going to do. You're just doing it. Right. And I read that this morning. Don't listen to somebody who says they're going to do something. Watch somebody that is doing something.
A lot of truth to that.
Yeah.
Those people in our lives that did have an enormous influence, they didn't do it by being elected. They did it in a very calm manner. And we all look to them for guidance and leadership and with a great deal of respect. I think that the point you raised earlier, you know, there's a remarkable book that I read many, many years ago. It's called Habits of the Heart. It was a sociologist from Southern California, and he was playing off the term that de Tocqueville had used as he toured America with that epic called America during the 1850s. And de Tocqueville was amazed at the kindness of the American people. And I think part of it is because we did not live in an aristocracy. We lived in a democracy. Right. But when de Tocqueville was searching for a term about the kindness and generosity of the American people, he couldn't come up with something other than it was a habit of the heart. Hmm. And I think there's so much truth to that. I don't think I've ever been to Mass in my entire life where the homily did not include a pledge, commitment, and acknowledgement of the poor.
Right, right.
We were poor when I grew up, I can tell you that.
Yeah.
Listen to my grandmother, you would have thought that we were the Kennedys or the Rockefellers, and because we were always going to have to give something to the poor.
Yeah.
And it was drilled into our heads. And I think that that is part of that fabric that you so correctly described. And there's a certain decency to the American people.
Yeah.
Sometimes it takes a while to get there, but we do get there.
Yeah. And you know, going back to kind of the same thing, my father was a fireman. My mother was a nurse. We didn't live in the lap of luxury, so to speak. I often tell this story during Lent. You remember Lent?
I do.
Every Friday.
I remember my home because you didn't have any choice about the food.
we had cream tuna, and my mother loved them, peas in the cream tuna on toast. That was our supper.
How about codfish? You couldn't take the smell when it came out of the box.
But
it tasted good.
Right. But here's the thing. We've got to get back to that. We've got to, you know, really. And I just celebrated my grandson's second birthday last weekend.
Congrats.
Oh, and the family showed up. And the reliving of other parties. But the we were saying, they were saying, they have now gotten back to sitting down for supper.
Yeah. Well, it's also, I can tell you that supper was a big deal, because that's where, once your father said you could talk, then you could talk. And but I agree with that. And there was always a question of what you were doing that day. And you didn't have the opportunity to say that you didn't do anything that day because you were on the spot. And I do think that those conversations about what you did, it was also part of a very important part of my life, and that was neighborhood.
Same here.
And to this day, my friends, the closest to me, the ones I would have offer a judgment on me, were the ones that were my friends when I was 7 or 8, 9, 10 years old. I think that that was a neighborhood, and we were all part of that fabric, as I've described. But I do think we've gotten away from it.
Yeah.
And distance learning doesn't help. I do think that schools do make a difference.
Yes.
I think that community makes a difference. Religious services make a difference. And we're not telling you, again, what religion to join. That's up to you.
That's on your call.
Provide you with a sense of community.
Well, I agree. And I'll emphasize it by saying, when I was in Vietnam, a guy that I grew up with, went to junior high and high school and played football with. And he wrote to me every day. Yeah. And it gets me a little emotional, because some days it was just, you'd open the letter and it'd be, "Hi, went out last night," or "went over to the ski lodge. Have a good day." You're in Vietnam. If you make the days a good day. So, but you're right. Those relationships, they're so important. And our family, my mother, God rest her soul, said nothing comes before or above family.
Right.
So, I mean, we got to get back to that. And I don't know the course. I mean, just being, I try to be an example of it. I try to treat everybody kindly. I mean, I've had people on this show that I probably wouldn't go out and have a drink with, but they have a right to be on this show. This is America.
Yeah, well, I also, to your point, I would take what my children have to say about me before anybody else.
Yeah.
I'd let them be the judge. And I'm pretty confident of what they would say, you know, and it's no matter how busy I was, I never missed a big moment or big day in their lives.
And that's the important part. Nothing comes above or before. But going back, how do you think they're going to deal with this immigration? The it's there now. What's your gut?
Well, my gut is that there's going to be a compromise, and that we're going to have to address the issue. I don't buy this argument that we're going to round up 11 million people, put them on buses, and bring them back to their native countries. But I do think that we need to know who's in the country for national security purposes. And whether we want to hear it or not, you can't have a million people walking across the border without acknowledgement every year.
Right.
Now, this is not a new position for me. It has been it's reasonable.
Yeah. That's why I'm asking you to let you restate it, because I think it's an important thing for people to hear.
And, you know, my grandparents were immigrants.
Mine too.
And I just think that this demonization of immigrants is inconsistent with Ronald Reagan's description of the shining city upon a hill.
You're right.
Yeah. Reagan favored immigration. And it wouldn't have been that distant from him as well. And I think that the clash that we're having is the failure to acknowledge we need a process, and simultaneously that we need immigrants.
Right. Yeah. And I think that's it. I think if Congress would just codify a path, that's all.
Yeah.
I mean, and stop with the rhetoric. I don't know anybody in this neighborhood, or my old neighborhood for sure, that parents or grandparents weren't immigrants.
And part of it is the other acknowledgement here that when our grandparents arrived and great-grandparents arrived and great-great-grandparents alive for a lot of other folks.
Yeah.
One of the challenges is you do have to remind people there was no social safety net. And that's not a put down as much as it's a fundamental acknowledgement.
That's right.
That they made their way into the economy really fast.
Yeah. To survive.
The country needed cheap labor.
Yeah.
Well, whether it was the canals, the bridges, you know, I mean, the Brooklyn Bridge alone, it's a great story of how it was constructed. Yep. You look at the Transcontinental Railroad, that was immigrant labor. I mean, Lincoln met the individual who convinced him in Iowa to proceed in the worst moments of the Civil War with the Transcontinental Railroad. And I think those are stories. Grenville Dodge was the guy's name that Lincoln met. He convinced Lincoln to go forward with the Transcontinental Railroad. My God, what that did for immigrants.
Well, and here, they still are around.
They are around.
The woolen mills. The woolen mills, my grandfather came and worked in the woolen mills. My wife's Polish family came, worked in the woolen mills.
On Friday night at the Westfield State University 185th birthday celebration, I sat with a couple from India.
Oh, wow.
Fellow is a entrepreneur. He owns a restaurant and a wife. They work very hard. In 2 seconds later, I was reintroduced to a new Superior Court judge here. And her parents were immigrants. Her husband runs the emergency room at Cooley Dickinson Hospital.
Oh, wow.
And I mean, I do think there's something special about somebody who wants to become an American by choice. By choice. We're born to it. We should be grateful for it. But I do think that, you know, it's pretty neat when somebody says, I want to take that exam.
Yeah.
I'm in.
Yeah. Yeah. And when you see people that want to come here and work so hard. Now, I know of a situation where it's unconscionable, but there's a Vietnamese man and his wife, she's waited. I think she's got to wait 6 more years. And he's working like a dog every day, and they're doing it the right way. And of course, you know, you do know what a whack job I am, right? So I just said, well, why don't you just fly her into Mexico and have her walk across, you know? But he wouldn't do that. But we have to give people that we know who they are and they want to come here and they want to be part of this dream. We have to give them access.
Yeah.
And I know you guys are working on it. I really do believe that. I'm not going to throw stones. My father taught me I interview actors and stuff. I go to all the plays. And if I don't like a play, I don't say anything. If I like it, they'll finally text me and tell me to shut up. We got the point. We know you like it. And the reason I say that is because I can't do what they do. I can't do what you do. I can't. And so I'm not going to throw stones. That's kind of been a philosophy of my life for a long time. And will I make a comment? Would I call up and say, Congressman, I think, what do you think about X? You know? And but I today, everybody's got an opinion. And sometimes they're not fact-based.
The problem with the opinion is it's but that, an opinion. If it's not based on fact, then it's but an opinion. And I point out readily to people when I'm talking to them, I'm glad you showed up with an opinion. I think it's more important if you could show up with some facts.
Yeah. But you, I know you have to run, but I just want to thank you for always coming on this show once a month. It means a lot. The feedback is phenomenal. And even Gene likes the show. Yes. I think he likes you more than me, but that's okay. Thank you for all you do. And is a personal thing, very personal, because I am suffering from it. I'm not going to kid you. I want to thank you for the PAC Act. You and all the people who put that together, because you don't know how beneficial it is to so many of us. because we have been fighting that Agent Orange battle forever.
Well, we changed the burden of proof.
Yeah.
And the burden of proof shifted to the Veteran Service, no longer to the individual applicant.
Right.
And, you know, Bill, one of the things that I would like to extend to you, and you can check the actual date, Jack's here, what is the date of the topping off ceremony at November 7th at the Soldiers Home.
Okay.
You want to see it. It's coming out of the ground. It's spectacular. And, you know, I'm hard to get that money for the Soldiers Home. But if you were around on that day, I know it would be very meaningful to you.
Oh, it would be. I'm going to write it down because remember what I told you? Memory.
But November 7th, the topping off ceremony, the governor's coming out, I believe. And I was able to convince the Veteran Service to do their part. And, you know, when you go to that, it's no longer going to be called the Soldier's Home, the Veteran's Home. But that's an honorable way for them to live out their final years.
Absolutely. And you know, I have to also, before you run, and I know Jack will be throwing stones at me here in a minute. But Jack is a lot, she's a lot calmer than Margaret.
Yeah.
Well, I love Margaret.
I'll tell Margaret that.
Yeah. Yeah. I love Margaret, what's being done in Northampton is nothing less than miraculous.
I had a hand in that because I represented Northampton for 20 years.
That's why I'm bringing it up, because
big deal.
The it's just an amazing thing. Thank you for coming on. Thank you for putting up with me, which is that's you'll get a little raise for that. But thanks for all you've done through your years, not just for veterans, but for the elderly, for the poor, for the people who needed somebody to call. I've recommended a couple of people to your office and they said the problem went away. You know,
got great staff. The Pittsfield
got a great staff.
Office, the Washington, I've had great staff over the years. And you know what? They are dedicated to those people you've just described.
I understand that. And before you go back to Washington, have the bishop give you a blessing. He's a great guy too.
Nice fella. He lives across the street from where you and I are just sitting, where I'm sitting anyway. He lives right across the street. I'm staring at St. Michael's Cathedral here, which is, you know, the home of the bishop and the diocese.
Yeah, he comes on. There's a young fellow that's helping the old soldier, and his name is Matthew. He's in your office, and please tell him thank you.
Great guy.
Yeah. Great guy. Great office. Great
people.
Well, we won't hold that against them, but that's okay. Goodbye. Thank you. Thanks, Jack. And we'll be in touch. Congressman, I'm always here if you need anything.
Thanks, Bill. You've been great. Thanks, pal.
Bye-bye. All right, everybody. I got a couple of announcements. The Halloween parade. The congressman may not be there, but it's going to be I got it right here. Halloween parade. Halloween parade. Will be held on Friday, October 25th at 7 p.m. on Tyler Street. So please get there, and if you can, certainly for certain, do it. And also, on October 31st, Thursday, it's from 3 to 5 p.m., and that's at the library. It's a special event. Join us on our second annual Holoteen party. Enjoy pizza, candy, crafts, and all that. Excuse me. That's at the Pittsfield Public Library. Thank you, everyone. God bless. And today, help somebody lift their burden. And you know what? Make them smile. We're all in this together. Together we can help each other. Talk to you soon. Thank you.